The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And our very own,
our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch.
All right, we are back. Meredith, I read your article, Disaster and the Effects of Training, and honestly, I was on the edge of my seat, and I had to get a blanket to feel warm so I could finish the article. It was that good. Tell us about working with our mules when there's a disaster out there.
Well, you know, disasters come in all different forms.
Yeah.
And it's not always a tornado or a hurricane or a flood or anything like that. No, you hear right from the get-go when you get these animals, all the different things that people want to tell you about what you should do so that you can avoid disasters. One of the things that was the primary in my mind when I bought this original 10 acres, this was a sheep farm. And the entire perimeter fence was consisted of barbed wire.
Mm.
And I thought, this is not good around equines. If they can get tangled up in it, they will. And granted, the mules are better about that than horses are, but I've even seen dumb mules get themselves spooked and then run into a big twist of barbed wire.
Sure.
And find themselves
yeah.
in a mess. You know, and granted, they generally will stand still while you untangle them from this mess. If you're thinking about these kinds of disasters, first of all, I had a perimeter fence with barbed wire all the way around it. And then I had neighbors that were running cattle. And of course, everywhere there's cattle, there's barbed wire. That seems to be the only thing that keeps those guys in. And not always. Not always. They will scramble through it and bend it, sit on it. They decide the grass is greener on the other side. And so if they want to get through, they're going to do that. And I'm thinking, well, here I am in tornado country, and people are telling me that if there's a tornado coming, that I need to turn my animals loose. I'm looking around my property, and I've got 10 acres all wired in with barbed wire, and I'm thinking, well, I could turn them out in that pasture, but they could still get tangled up in the barbed wire. And then, of course, when you watch television after one of these tornadoes has gone through, you always see horses that are tangled up in wire. They are trapped in wooden barns that have caved in. They are up to their bellies in water from the flooding. You have to ask yourself, what good did it do to turn them loose? And they're hauling these animals out, and they're all cut up, and some of them worse than others. And I'm thinking, well, how much good did it do to turn them loose when there was a disaster? That's not really cool. And then the other thing, like in my property, I only had three-sided sheds in there, but all the pens were built out of bore wire and boards that were split with nails in them. I thought, well, this isn't a very safe situation.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, the first thing I'm going to do is got a hired hand here, and he's a cheap guy, and we bought a skid loader. So I thought, well, I'll have him go take up all the barbed wire around the perimeter fence. This was already 2 years into buying this property, so I was able to have this skid loader, which was good. Up to that point, I did not have any tractors or anything like that, and I wanted to build a barn. So I had started digging a 2-acre place for my barn near the house, but I was using a shovel to that all out. But by the time I got this hired hand and wanted to take down all this perimeter fencing, I had the money to get a skid loader. I took out a loan and I got one. Well, I told Gene, I said, you go out there and start tearing down this wire and just stack it over here and be sure to tie it up good so that it doesn't spring on you. And he disappeared in the morning to go do this fence. And by feeding time, he wasn't back.
Wow.
I was getting a little worried.
Sure.
So I went out there to look for him. He was on the road coming back from the turnout pen, and the skid loader was completely encompassed in barbed wire. He forgot when he was rolling the barbed wire that he needed to tie it off. And it sprung loose on him and completely wrapped up the skid loader.
Ooh.
He couldn't get out.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
So I'm thinking, well, good thing we're taking down this barbed wire. Yeah, you know, so did that, and that was fine. And then we got to where we were starting to build the barn. Well, I decided that I was concerned about fires. People had told me not to store your hay in the loft above your animals in the barn. That was a standard design for barns, for old barns, was to have a hay loft because it was convenient to climb up in the hayloft and open up the trap doors to go ahead and drop the hay down into the stalls. But that was also a way to trap your horses, because if the fire started in the hayloft, there was no way for the horses to get out. Most of those old barns were designed with the haylofts up top,
right?
But they did not have runs off the stalls. They were closed in.
Mm-hmm.
So if there was a fire, then those horses would be trapped in those barns and burned to death unless you could get them out somehow before the fire spread. Those kinds of things started hitting me. And that's why when I decided to build my barn, I did a portastall barn that was all steel. And not only was it all steel, it was a 14-stall barn, 12 by 12 stalls, 7 on each side. But I had that barn open up into my indoor arena, which I was building at the time, and as 60 by 120 feet. I eventually enlarged it to 60 by 180 feet. With the design, too, that there would be steel panels coming off of each of those stalls. And if there was any chance for fire or any other kind of disaster, I wanted to be able to open up that barn and have the animals allowed into their pens where they wouldn't be trapped under a falling roof or anything like that. I wanted the indoor arena at the end of the alleyway so that if it looked like there was going to be tied-in fire around the barn, that what I could do is go ahead and turn those animals into that indoor arena. And I had another big tractor door at one end of the arena where if I needed to, I could run them into the arena and keep them in there, or I could run them all the way out through the tractor door, the big metal door, and run them out into the turnout pens and still have them contained by safe fencing. The last thing I wanted to do was run them into the neighborhood. I knew they would get hurt. There were so many things out there that people had just left laying around, and they didn't think about, you know, keeping their farms picked up and neat and tidy. And there was just so much stuff for those animals to get tangled up in out there. I just thought, turning them loose is not an option in my book. I want my animals to be safe. So when I built this property, I built those kinds of thoughts in mind. And they taught me sooner than later that it was fine to have metal panels containing the runs, but that I was going to need more than that, because they knew how to undo those latches and let themselves out.
All right.
So I was introduced to chains and carabiner snaps that they couldn't get their teeth around and undo. So, you know, I'm just thinking about all of this stuff being safe. Fire, you know, in a metal barn is highly unlikely, especially when you don't store your hay close to the barn. We built a hay barn, the first hay barn, quite a ways from the barns. If I wanted to have the hay up close to the barn, we built storage areas where it would hold one stack of hay, which is roughly, what, about 40 bales. And I would have that near the barn, and it would be a little bit of ways away from the barn, so that if that caught fire, it was by itself. And it would just burn down the shed. It was going to burn down anything. But it was close enough in so that we could stack a week's worth of hay there in that shed and feed from there for convenience. This is the way I always thought about when I organized my property and when we were going to build something new to add on to it. Now, I was breeding mares, and at the time I had a wooden barn for the mares with oversized stalls in it, but I still had metal panels coming off of that barn so that if I needed to, if it looked like there was going to be a fire, or it seemed like there could be. In this country here, it can get mighty hot. And we have places catching fire all the time up in the foothills and the mountains and the Rocky Mountains. And I was very, very grateful that this property here, the original 10 acres, and then adding the 95 acres on later for our hay fields and everything, put us on an island with no trees. At first I was a little miffed because I didn't have any trees. So I went ahead and went out and planted a bunch of trees, which when the animals were in turnout, they promptly ate them. Didn't work real well with the mules. They have their own agenda, you know. Well, this tree is too little for shade anyway. I think I'll eat it. And so I thought, well, okay, they're telling me that I can't plant the trees where the mules are going to be. What I got to do is figure out, okay, I want the mules in a dirt pen, but they want shade, but they don't want little trees because little trees don't provide shade. So I just watched where the sun was going. When the sun was setting in the west, it was going to throw shade across the dirt pen if I planted the trees on the outside of the fence on the west side. Yeah. So what we did was we dug a huge trench along the west fence of the dirt pen, and that's where we planted the tree. And granted, in the first year or two, they weren't very big. They were about 15, 20 feet. And didn't throw a lot of shade into the dirt pen, but we did have shed in there that they could get in underneath if they wanted to. And as those trees grew, they threw more and more shade into that dirt pen and provided shade for the animals where they could get in out of the heat and out of the sun and everything. And so we just decided that was the way to go. Now, I had a smaller pasture down south of the house that was off the pens where I kept the minis behind the garage. I wanted nice big cottonwood trees down there. And so we planted cottonwoods along the fence. And instead of planting them out on the outside of the pasture, we planted them in the pasture. Then we took chicken wire and we covered them around with chicken wire, and found out a couple years later that we had to redo the chicken wire about every 3 years because the trees were getting wider and wider and wider, and the chicken wire was getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And I kept my mammoth donkeys down there, the mammoth jennets, and sometimes I would keep the jack down there. But Lucky 3 Excalibur was quite creative. When he was by himself, he was so bored because I always kept my jacks by themselves. He liked the turnout pen and he liked the shade from the cottonwood trees, but he didn't like the chicken wire around the trunks because I guess it felt weird on his teeth or something. And so went out there one day and these cottonwoods had gotten to 25 feet high. They were quite high. The one on the end of the line had fallen down.
Ooh.
Because Excalibur had eaten his way through the chicken wire. And when he got through that, then he ate his way through the trunk of the tree and felled that tree right where it was. I never did replace that tree. I neglected to put any more donkeys down in that pen, and I decided that I had to do better with the chicken wire around it. So instead of putting chicken wire around the trunks of the trees, what we did was we put panels of wire with stakes and built little corrals around the trees.
Oh, yeah.
So they couldn't get right up against the trunks.
Okay.
And the other thing that we had to do, too, was we had the shed that I started with that were wooden shed. They would just chisel those wooden posts. It looked like sculpture. And eventually the posts would get so narrow that the shed started to fall. So we decided to put metal posts in holding up the sheds and metal roofs on the top of the sheds. But we still had the wooden wall. I thought, well, okay, we're going to go ahead and line that with the chicken wire. But that didn't really stop them either. It did for a little while, but they got in there and started pulling that chicken wire off the walls, and we decided that maybe it wasn't going to work. So a few years later, when the walls got really thin, we just tore them down. We had this one shed that was out in the 12 acres. We went ahead and decided to put steel siding on it. Now the shed had a steel roof, steel posts, steel walls, and those damn mules.
Uh-oh.
They decided to lean on the posts and to lean on the walls, and we went out there one day, and that shed was flat on the ground.
Oh,
we
no.
didn't sink the posts deep enough in the ground. See, these guys are full of lessons.
Oh, yeah.
Full of lessons. So I decided that 12-acre turnout pen was no longer going to be a turnout pen. I was not going to rebuild that shed. I was going to turn that into a hay field, and the mules were not going to be turned out there anymore. We went ahead and just had smaller turnout pens on the south side of the property. That one was on the north side. And we went ahead and built some turnout sheds that worked fine that had steel roofing on it. We sunk the steel posts far enough in the ground so now they couldn't push it over. And then we lined those sheds because it gets so hot. We only use those pens for turnout. So we put in vinyl boards and we left an inch and a half spacing between those boards. And we only put walls on two sides so that it would let the breezes through and they could get under the metal roof and stay cool. And then, of course, we couldn't put the trees in the turnout pens because they would eat them. But that made for a nice place for them to go into the shade. At that point in time, we had 127.5 acres now, fully fenced around the entire perimeter with vinyl fencing hot wires around the top. And I thought, if there's ever a fire that comes down through those foothills, it's going to go into the subdivisions that are flanking our property before it ever gets to our hay fields. So we have a place to turn our animals out during a fire on our own property with equine safe fencing around it. And the chances of it getting through those subdivisions that flank our property is slim to none. They'd have the fire trucks in there and they'd be putting those fires out before they even got to my property, which I was very happy about. And my belief in God is so strong, I thought, he's not going to let those fires come in across my hay fields. Because we kept those hay fields the way that they were, and we kept them pristine, we kept those hay fields watered regularly. We irrigated those so they would stay wet. so that if a fire made it to the perimeter of the property, the chances of it getting into the property and becoming a brush fire was slim to none. We managed our hay fields very meticulously. That was good. And in all of this, there's people that say, oh, yeah, you got to have a disaster kit or a this or that. I think it makes more sense when you're designing the structure of your property to think about these things and be willing to spend a little extra money to do these things the right way.
Yeah.
To use the more expensive materials like metal that will not burn. So you will not trap your animals. Now, I just saw a horrendous fire that took place in Ohio. It was an old facility that Quentin Anderson built for himself. And they lost, I think, 80 horses in that fire.
Yeah.
But the way that it was designed, it had living quarters built into this one big square structure. I guess they built it for convenience because they wanted the trainers to be able to have their own quarters in there and not have to go very far to get there. So it was all built in this one square under this one roof. And all the stalls were in there. Indoor arenas were in there. They did not have any runs going off to the outside, which meant those horses were trapped in that barn. I'm a firm believer in convenience. Like I talked to you about this, building my barn so close to the house that people were worried about having fly infestation and all of that. But we talked about how to keep it clean and how to keep that from going on and how to space these buildings apart so that even in a wind, you won't have a spark if there's a fire jumping from one building to the next. But that, too, is a matter of keeping your grounds immaculately clean. Don't have piles of sawdust anywhere or piles of manure anywhere with things in it that can catch fire.
Yeah.
If you do, put it well away from your barns and your houses. But when you design your house and barn and everything, I have to say here, just a week and a half ago, we had a horrendous hailstorm come through here and dump so much rain on this place that it did a lot of damage. The hail was golf ball size, and I heard it coming down on the roof, and my cats were going crazy. And it sounded like there was a tornado coming through here. So I went ahead and looked out the windows, and I saw this golf ball size hail coming down. And the water that was coming down was so thick that you could not see out the windows into the driveway. It was just a whitewash.
Mm.
And so I went ahead and went upstairs in the west bedroom and looked out the sliding glass door, and the water that was coming down was 6 inches high on the door and running like a river through there. But now, walking over from the west bedroom on the decking over to the solarium, that big solarium building was blocking the wind that was coming from the west. And behind the solarium was the grain room building where all the feed stuff is. And behind that was the barn and the indoor arena. So all that wind was being dispersed. And it wasn't just being blown in as one big gust coming off of the foothills to the west where the Rockies were. We get horrendous winds off of that. And a lot of times, like the storm that I talked about in the article that I wrote, that you read, all tucked in,
yes.
You know, I mean, we get storms like that.
Yeah.
But this one that we just had was the worst I've ever seen.
Wow.
But I noticed that it was really smart that we built these buildings the way that we did structurally and spaced them the way that we did and staggered them the way that we did, because all we had to do when my guys put the animals into their stalls that night, we closed the stall doors about two-thirds of the way. And that's just enough for the animals to squeeze through into their stalls and go around the corner and hunker down in the corner of their stall if they want to get out of that hail. That's what we do, and that's just a protocol that we have. When we know a storm's coming, we don't leave the doors wide open. We close those stall doors two-thirds of the way, just enough so those animals can squeeze their bodies through, but so the wind won't go whipping through that barn, because we got stalls on both sides, and if we left them wide open, they wouldn't have anywhere to stand in the barn where they wouldn't be whipping through the wind or having the sawdust flying up in their faces. So just thinking about these kinds of things can make your animals a whole lot more comfortable. And when they're comfortable, they know that it's because you're thinking about them. They know that. Well, when you have to go in, take care of them, then they're going to be hunkered in their little corner of the stall, and they're not going to be running around the stall like a maniac and possibly knocking you down and trampling you or anything.
Right.
They just go, oh, here you are. Mm-hmm. You decided to come out in this weather? What's the matter with you, you know? See, I always kind of operated like that anyway. People told me, oh, yeah, if they're going to be ridden in bad weather, take it to the indoor arena or warm them up before you ride them and everything. I never really thought that was much of a solution.
Yeah.
Because I could never predict what the weather was going to be at a show. I thought, well, how about just getting them used to this weather by riding them in it? If it was pouring down rain, I didn't take that to mean we had to ride in the indoor. I took that to mean, well, we're going to get a little wet, so maybe we ought to put a raincoat on, you know, and wear a hat, you know,
yeah,
and gloves and all of that things. Let's just dress the part, because we never know when we're going trail riding in the mountain, if we're going to get hit by a hailstorm up there, and you can't get down to the parking lot fast enough to get to your trailer. So you're going to get caught in a storm. Why not get used to being caught in a storm? And so that's what I did. I went out when it was raining, and I did it at the ranch. And then I would go up, and we would think that we were in the clear up in the Rockies. And we'd go up on these trail rides and get way about 10, 15 miles in. And then we'd look up at the peaks. And over the top of the peaks, the clouds were coming in. And we're going, oh, no,
right,
we're going to get hit.
You know? Yeah.
But I thought, we brought our clothes. We have them in our saddlebags. We've got the rain jackets in the saddlebags. You know, we got our ponchos. We got everything we need here. Even food, if we got to hunker down, then we would ride out of there. But we never rode at a trot or a gallop.
Mm.
We always remembered the rule, if you don't want a barn sour animal, don't run them on the way home.
Right.
Walk
right.
them home. That's what I did. And we were getting pelted by the hail and everything, but I had these ponchos and stuff that I could put over the top of the animals, too, up their neck or across their butts and everything, so when they got pelted, it wasn't too bad. And I just thought about them that way. They came to know that when we were riding in a hailstorm, that all we got to do is walk, and eventually the workout will be over, because we never work for 2 hours. We only work for 40 minutes, 20 to 40 minutes for a lesson.
Mm.
And then we go in and it's over. And when it's over, I take towels to them and I wipe them down and get them dry. And if necessary, we go ahead and we can use the vacuum cleaner to get some of the moisture out of their hair coat. I can use hair dryers to get the rest of it off if I need to. I just never really got excited about the weather that way. And if it was raining, I wouldn't let it keep me in the indoor. I would go out and ride in it. If it was cold, I would just get dressed and ride in the cold, because you never know when you're going to be riding in the cold. And during combined training, that weather can be anything. They have those three-day event shows, and you don't know what the weather's going to be.
Yeah.
And you don't even know if you're really going to want to go, but you may have to ride a dressage test or do stadium jumping in an arena or go cross-country in God knows what kind of weather. You just dress the part, and you dress your animal for the part. And you get used to riding in that kind of stuff. And we've ridden in snowstorms when the snow was coming down. It was bloody cold. But I would just dress the part and get up there and put things on. And if I thought that the animal was going to get cold, then I would just put a stable blanket on underneath my saddle and go ahead and make sure that they were warm too. And we would go ahead and ride in that weather. And if it was icy cold, then just, again, dress the part. We rode in slush. And then a lot of times we would get, the next day would be sunny, but from all the sleet and snow and everything that came down the night before, we would have a nice powder over the top of ice. I got to thinking, well, let's see, if we're going to be riding in this snow with ice underneath it, then maybe I better put borium shoes on these guys so they don't slip. And so I would shoe my animals in the wintertime when I thought I would be riding on ice.
Wow.
And then we would go ahead, and believe you me, you talk about balance and harmony and dressage. That is a way to get it. That is one surefire way to learn how to balance with your equine. Because you get them rigged up in the shoes so they won't slip, and then you have to ride your balanced seat 10 times better than you ever thought about it. You had to do it. You had to really, really hold that seat. Because if you didn't, you could end up sitting down in the ice. But if you rode in that stuff and you learned how to get your balance on ice, on your animal, through a dressage test, I guarantee you when you rode in the summertime, in the sand, in a dressage test, that you were going to look amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
And that's the way I train my animals, is by caring about their structure, their physical conditioning, how they were dressed for the occasion, how I was dressed for the occasion, with the idea that Mother Nature is not necessarily kind. But
right.
I love to ride my mules, and I want to ride when I want to ride. And they want to ride, too. They just want to be prepped so that they're comfortable while they're doing it. And if they are, then that's fine. And they only get anxious when I go, oh, no, a storm is coming, and start running. Then you create the anxiety that you don't want to have out of them.
Right.
And from all of this way of thinking through all these different things and all these different lessons that I'm doing, I mean, I would go to my lesson with my instructor, but we would only go on good days because she only wanted to go out during the good days. And she'd go, well, how much practice did you get this week? And I would tell her, we didn't miss a lick. We were out for 20, 40 minutes every other day, just like we decided we were going to do. Never ride every day. Always leave a day of rest in between to think about what we learned and to kind of recover from the day before. And she, did you ride in that rainstorm the other day? Well, yeah. Why didn't you ride indoors? Because it's easy to ride indoors. We know we can do that. We just wanted to make sure we could ride in the rain. That's what we did. We wanted to make sure we could ride in a snowstorm. We wanted to make sure that the nice, pretty powder in the dressage arena that had ice underneath it was still negotiable with the right shoes. I mean, we figured we went ahead and wore Boreum shoes on the asphalt during the parades. Why wouldn't it work on the ice?
Right.
You know? So we tried all this stuff, and this is what we did. My crew is not the best at predicting the weather. In fact, weathermen are the only people I know that can get paid for being wrong.
Right.
They're never right. And you got sun out there, you know, and it's a nice, warm, sunny day, and you look towards the west, and the mountains are all nice and clear, and you don't see any storms coming over, and you look to the north, and there's nothing coming over that way either, and you're just like, oh, okay, well, we really don't want to put the south barn back in the barn, because if we do, then my crew has to clean the barn the next morning. So we try to make it easy on them by keeping the south barn in the dirt pen overnight, so that all the crew has to do is clear the dirt pen. And we do that about once a week. We don't have to do that every day. You know, but like I say, you know, disaster is not always predictable or even expected. And we know the weathermen aren't right. You can just kind of decide what you're going to do. And it was particularly hot this one evening. And I thought, oh, okay, well, it's hot. The animals are in the dirt pen. That's good. I think I'm just going to cuddle up on the couch and watch a movie. And so I got into my pajamas and I sat on the couch and turned on the TV. And pretty soon, it got really, really loud. And I went, uh-oh, what is it doing outside? I went to look out the window. I could not see anything but a sheet of water. Couldn't even see the animals in the dirt pen. Had a sliding glass door I was looking through, but all I could see was sheets of water. And I assumed that the animals from the south barn were underneath the shed. They had to be under the shed. When we excavated that dirt pen, we expected that dirt pen to flood with the instant rains that we get. And so we wanted to make sure that the animals had a place to go to get out of the water if they needed to. And so we built up the floor of those sheds quite a bit higher, probably about 3 feet higher than the surrounding ground. And then we put structural fill in so that it wouldn't get muddy out there. And so that's just all part of this planning that I'm talking about, you know, when you're putting all these things together for your animals. And I thought, I feel sorry for those guys out there. I'm sitting in here on the couch with my pajamas and my warm blanket around me, and they're out there in this God knows what's going on. It's hailing out there. It was probably about a half a golf ball size. And I thought, I got to get them out of the dirt pen. My crew does not live on the ranch, and they live north of town, so it would take them a good half hour to get there. And by that time, it could stop raining, which it generally does. You know, it'll do it for a little while, and then it stops. Then you've missed it. But I'm sitting here going, oh, my God, look at this. Sheet lightning, bolted lightning flying across the sky and everything, and my mules are stuck in the dirt pen north of the north barn. And I thought, God, I gotta do this right. And the sky had just opened up, and the hail mixed with sheets of rain began coming down faster and harder. And I looked out that sliding glass door, and the mules were running in and out of the shed. They were trying to all get in the shed, but there were 10 of them, and there were crabby faces in there. And the crabby faces were going, I want to be under the shed, and you can't be under the shed. So it was running some of the mules out from underneath the shed, and I felt so sorry for them. I thought, I've got to do something here. I decided that I needed to get my oats to the south barn, because you should always have the oats waiting for them in the barn if you want them to come in. That is just standard protocol. That's okay. Except I had one more obstacle that I had to negotiate, because we had been changing the water lines to the barns, and there was a big old trench going from the feed barn down the middle of the road on the east side of the north barn and the south barn, and the power was turned off because they were trenching. So the lights weren't on in the barn, and I had to get the oats down to the south barn without falling into the trench. But I couldn't see where I was going because there weren't any lights. I had to go back into the tack room, and I had to run between the grain room and the tack room because the lightning was coming down in between buildings. And so I did, and I got into the tack barn, and I found my flashlight. And so I thought, well, that's okay. I've got my flashlight now. And I made my way back to the grain room, and I got a nice big rubber bucket, and I filled it up with oats, and I made my way out of the grain room, and I jumped the trench. Now I was on the west side of the trench in front of the two barns. So I made my way down as far as I could to the south barn, but the trenching got really close to the barn, so I could not go down to the barn doors and go in that way. I had to climb through the middle pen and open up the gate going into the pen on the farthest east stall. I walked down the pen, and I got into the barn through the stall that way. And then I'm standing in this friggin' barn that is darker than snot, man. And I couldn't see the feed doors on the walls. I had the bucket, and I had the scoop, but I had to put all the oats in the feed things. I had to hold the bucket, hold the scoop, and hold the flashlight all at once while I made my way down to put this scoop of oats in every single stall. And first I went ahead and put the flashlight on the wall to find approximately where the door was that I had to open. Then I had to put down the flashlight and open the door and grab the scoop from the bucket and then aim it into the hole and do that with every one of the 10 stalls in that barn. And then I had to pick the stall that I was going to bring the animals through. And I thought, okay, I know Lindy is really good about letting everybody walk past her, so I'll open up the doors in Lindy's stall. I'll have to put Lindy into a stall on the other side while I get the other ones through her stall into the alleyway. You got to realize these guys are coming in the dark. And so I'm like, oh, okay, well, whatever. I opened up the stall doors to Lindy's stall, and then I opened up the door to one of the stalls on the south side. Lindy's stall is on the north side. I was going to put Lindy in the stall on the north side while I walked those other animals through her stall. But then I went ahead and I waited in the stall door at the back of the stall right where it emptied into her run. And I was looking across two sets of runs, the runs that were on the south side of the north barn and the runs that were on the north side of the south barn. And I was watching the lightning just coming down, just cracking everywhere. And then sheet lightning going across the top and everything. And the rain is just pouring down. And I'm going, okay, I have to get those animals all the way from the north side of the north barn into this barn down here, into the alleyway. Okay, this is my challenge. It's raining. and it slowly starts coming down a little less intense, I thought, oh, wait a minute, I got to have a halter because I got to move some animals here. Because when I walk across this run, I'm going to end up in Spuds's, the mini donkey's run. And he's in his stall and he needs to be moved because these other animals need to come through here. I grabbed the halter and I had it over my shoulder and I was watching the rain some more and I was hollering at Spuds. He was standing in his stall looking at me in the other barn. And I says, I'm coming, Spuds. And he goes, like, yeah, this is not cool, Spuds. So I went ahead and the rain kind of slowed down a little bit. So I got to the end of the run, I fell in a hole because Lindy likes to dig. And I forgot that she digs holes right in front of her gate. So I went splashing down in a puddle. I didn't go all the way down. I went to my knees and I grabbed the gate and I was hanging from the gate. And then I went ahead and very quickly undid the carabiner snap and chain and undid that gate and swung it open. And then Spuds is looking at me like, oh, that was a good move. And then I got back on my feet. I walked across the road in between the pens and got to Spuds's gate and I undid that one. And then I walked up his alleyway, and the rain was still kind of just coming down pretty mildly at that point. And when I got to Spuds' stall door, I went ahead and put the halter on him and opened up his door on the inside of the alleyway of the barn and took him to an empty stall and put him in there. Now I was all set up to go get the guys from the dirt pen. I went to the end of the barn where I usually bring them through. When we go to turn out, we always turn out through the same stall so that they always know where they need to go. I went ahead and opened the door on the north side of the north barn, opened the stall door that was nearest the door on the east side, opened up that door, then I opened up the door going into the run. But I had taken down the panels on that side to make a great big turnout pen for the donkeys. I didn't have a whole bunch of runs on that side. I had a big open area. So I opened up the stall door opening into that open area, and I could see over into the dirt pen, and I could see all the mules, the 10 mules, running in and out of that shed and fighting with each other over in that corner. I told them, I said, I'm coming! I'm coming! And they all kind of looked at me, and they go, are you kidding? And then the rain started again. And then the lightning started again. And then there was a crack, man, right by the north side of the barn. And I'm like, ooh, this does not look that safe. Mm. But I still have two more gates to get through to get to these guys. I went ahead and walked into the pen and walked west to where the mule crossing was. And I got to the mule crossing gate and undid it. But then the wind was so bad, it was swinging the gate back and forth. And so I had to take the gate and chain it to the fence so it wouldn't swing into the animals when I opened up the other gate. I got to the second gate, the one that went into the dirt pen, and all the mules were standing in that shed, and they were about an acre away. I said, hey guys, come on, let's go. They all looked down at the water in the pen, which came to their knees, by the way. I said, no, it's really okay, guys. Just come on over here, and we're all going to your barn. And they went, oh, and they all perked up their ears. And then Lance took a step out and shook his head because he got hit by some hail. I said, no, Lance, it's okay, it's okay. And he shook his head, and then he stepped out into the water. And I said, come on. And he walked delicately into the water, and every single one of those mules dropped in behind him at the walk, and they walked to the gate where I was. I opened the gate for them. Lance stopped at the gate and, are you okay? I'm okay. I'm getting pelted by hail, but this is okay. Oh, and there's another flash of lightning. Let's just take this slowly. But Lance, you go ahead and lead him over there. The door is open over there. And he goes, yeah, I know, that's always open. So he walks over to there, and the other guys get in behind him just like a string of pack mules. They all walk into the barn, and then meanwhile, after Merlin was the last one going through the gate, I went ahead and closed the gate to the dirt pen and closed the gates that were closing in the alleyway, closed the gate that opened up into the jenny pen, and then walked into the barn through the open door, and everybody was in the alleyway eating up loose pieces of hay. So I went ahead and opened the stall door where Spuds was and said, okay, guys, it's open all the way to your barn now. And they looked down the alleyway, down Spuds' run, and they went, but it's dark out there.
Yeah.
I went, yeah. I said, Lance, can you take them over to the other barn, please? And so Lance took the lead again. The other mules dropped in line, and they all went in. Lindy was second in line, and she decided she wanted to stop in her stall and eat. So she went ahead and did that while everybody else walked right by her and into the alleyway of the south barn. And then they all went and stood in front of their stall doors and waited for me to get there. It was pretty cool. I was lucky, I must say, at one point, because when I did get into the north barn where they were all waiting for me, I flipped a light switch and it worked. So only the lights in the south barn were turned off.
Oh.
So I had light in the north barn, and that made them okay, except they took exception when I tried to make them go out of the light into the dark. I told them, I said, it's okay, let's just do this. We went ahead and did it, and I walked into that dark area with my flashlight, and I scanned all the mules to see if they were all where they were supposed to be. And Vinny had missed where he was supposed to be and didn't know where to go, so he was just standing outside Lindy's stall door. And I told him, I said, Vinny, your stall is to the left and at the end of the alleyway. And I pointed the flashlight at his feed door, and I said, and there's oats in there if you want them. And he goes, oh, but I can't go over there. And I said, oh, but you can. And so I said, I'll walk with you if you're scared. So we walked his stall, and I opened the door, and he went in, and then he was all happy. So then I had to go to the other end of the barn, because Merlin was already at his stall door on the other end, and he was stomping his feet going, it's time for me to go in. So I went down there, and I opened up the door. See, they do have a certain order that they go in. It's all a matter of pecking order. So, yes, it was Merlin's turn to go in, but Vinny had to go in first. And then, after I turned Merlin in, then it was time for Guy and Sassy to go in, but they were on the other side of the alleyway. But they were waiting by their doors, so I just walked across the alleyway and opened the doors, and they went in, and that was fine. April decided she wanted to go in, but she was on the other side and well down towards the east. And Angel and April always hang together. But I walked down there, and April spooked at her door. And so I had to shine the flashlight on the door and open it up and show her that there was nothing hiding in her stall. And then she went in, and Angel was standing there, and she goes, but this isn't my stall. And I said, Angel, I know it's not your stall. Your stall is down the other way. You're supposed to be down there by Merlin. And she goes, oh, that's right. And she walks down there and stands in front of the door and waits for me to get there. I'll put her in, you know. Meanwhile, Lance is watching me go back and forth and back and forth with all these animals. And then finally, I got back up to Lindy. Lindy's still standing in her stall eating her oats, and nobody got to take any away from her because she wouldn't let them. And then Lance looks at me and he goes, is it my turn yet? And I said, yes, Lance, it's your turn. So we're going to go to Lance's stall next, you know. So I closed Lindy's door, and I went ahead. We walked one door over to Lance's, and I opened the door, and he goes, "Are the oats in there yet?" And I said, "Yes, they are in there, Lance." And he walked into his stall very quietly and very sedately and put his face in his feeder, and he was very, very happy. And everything went really well. And everybody was in their stalls and all put away and happy. And then I was happy because everybody was in their stalls the way that they should be. So now I can go back to the house, get back in my pajamas, sit on the couch, wrap up in my blanket, and watch my movie and know that every one of my mules is safely tucked into their own beds.
Okay, but you didn't read them a bedtime story.
That was the bedtime story.
That was your bedtime. Okay.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, I just think that it's so important how you keep your cool and how you think things through when you're training.
Oh, yeah.
That you don't even realize that you're setting them up for being handled during a disaster.
Yeah.
Now, if a real tornado had come through there, and I had to, I could very easily have just opened the gates right out of that north barn into that indoor arena and right out the other side into the hayfield. And they would have been able to be free to go wherever they wanted to on 100 acres and get out of the way of the storm, which they have the good sense to do.
Okay.
I know they do.
Right.
But my guys, they seem to know when it's dangerous and when it isn't, when they should just hunker through that door that's closed two-thirds of the way and get into their corners of the stalls and just stay there and stay calm. And that's what they do.
Yeah.
They don't pace. They don't spread the shavings around. They're not anxious a bit. They just go straight to the feeders and start eating. And as they tell you, if you want to see if your animal's calm, see if they're chewing.
Mm, right.
Well, the fastest way I know to make them chew is to give them some oats.
There you go.
And so that gets them to chewing right away. You don't have to stand there and wait for them to chew before you give them the oats. You give them the oats and then watch them chew. You know, that's what's called common sense. And my animals know I got common sense because they taught it to me.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was smart enough to listen to them when they did. And I can't tell you how grateful I am to each and every single one of them when I get into a situation like that where I'm left here by myself with these animals and they are as good as gold.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not just that way with me either, because Chad brought his son over here one night out of the three times I had to do this, and Chad got here with his son, and he told his son, go out and get the mules. His son was only 11 years old, and he went out there and did the same thing that I did. He went to the gate, he called the mules out of the shed, they walked to him, they checked with him to make sure he was all right, they got their directions to go ahead and go, and they went and they did exactly what Bowden told them to do.
Wow, that's good. That is good.
And it is.
Yeah.
That's why the name of this is the effects that disaster, that training has on disastrous situations. You can find yourself in the middle of a disaster with animals that are perfectly well-mannered. You don't have to be in the middle of a stampede. But a lot of people will put themselves there.
Yeah.
And they have no one to blame but themselves.
Another good one, Meredith. We wrapped up another episode, and I think I'm hungry.
Me too. I think so too, but I have to say, I am eternally grateful for the lessons that my mules have taught me.
Yeah, I am too.
They're keeping me safe as I age so that I can continue to enjoy them no matter how old I get.
Yeah.
I know that they are going to look after me They're going to protect me, and our relationship is just going to get deeper.
Very good. All right. I guess we'll go grab a bite, and we will talk soon.
Sounds good.
Meredith Hodges has books and training videos available on her website, Lucky3Ranch.com. You can call Meredith at 1-800-816-7566. You can email Meredith at Meredith@Lucky3Ranch.com. She's also on social media.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl Stream production.